Oh.
I think we can go. Good. All right. Good afternoon. It is what time? We're 4:04, and I'd like to bring the Environmental Services Advisory Committee to order. And let's go through the roll call first. Item one, Doug Jennings,
Here.
Margo Garcia,
Here.
Susanna Shippers,
Here.
and Hallie Hughes.
Here.
Here. Okay, so we have a quorum. Real quickly for item two, chairperson's report. Brittany sent you that article about the group, the Circular Arizona group, and actually Margo's told me about this, and I thought it was really interesting, and I'd never heard of it before, and I'd like to know more about this group. So maybe I saw that Christina is one of the people listed
Yes, she's on the board.
on the board.
Yes,
Yeah.
and she's even been president, I believe.
Maybe sometime Christina can tell us what's going on with that. So.
Could tell you very quickly that it is the it's just the Arizona Recycling Coalition renamed.
Oh, well, okay. But I think it's interesting to see all the people that are involved, and it's good to know that it's going on. So if you ever, have some new info or can bring something to us in ESAC, I think we would enjoy hearing about it.
I would be happy to.
Oh, good. Okay. And then there was a webinar that Marco sent to us. I don't know if anybody had a chance, Carlos, to listen to that. Did you or?
Chris, I just want to interrupt that Fred has at 4:06 arrived to the meeting.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, I see you. Okay, thank you. Hi, Fred.
Okay, Chris. Yeah, there's a few of us that participated to the webinar. Yes, so thank you, Ms. Margo, for sharing that information.
Okay.
What did you learn?
It was a very theoretical presentation. I think don't want to sound that not a whole lot. It didn't really. It just resonated a lot of the stuff, a lot of the concepts that we have talked about. So it just really further reinforced that the things that we're seeing and how we're approaching are essentially very similar. So nothing totally out of the ordinary one way or another.
Okay.
It was from the National Research Council, and I was a little hesitant about sending it out because, I know we're doing a really good job, so maybe we wouldn't learn anything. On the other hand, you never know what you might learn. So that's why I'm glad that someone was able to watch it. And I apologize myself. I was in transit, so I wasn't able to watch it myself.
Okay.
Glad you went,
So,
Carlos. Thank you.
and if anybody in ESAC comes across something interesting that you think that we should read about or you'd want to bring to one of our meetings, just let Brittany know.
You
We
could
can
tell it
put
was
it
really
on
done
the
by on a theoretical atmosphere. I think it was good. It was good research. It resonated a lot of the things that we have seen or seeing, and the ideas they're exploring. Certainly, those are some of the things that could be considered. But I think is they're a little bit more harder to implement on kind of at a much greater scale. So, it was good to listen that we're in the ballpark.
Good, good. I'm glad to hear that.
That always feels good. All right. So let's move on to item three for the director's report. Carlos, you're going to speak to us first about the Environmental Services Program Overview, where we're at.
Okay. So I believe in the last meeting or a couple of meetings ago, because we didn't have one last meeting last month, some questions raised were raised in terms of all the programs that we offer. So I thought maybe we could just, there's some new members and there's stuff that maybe we have taken for granted that we do, and maybe just wanted to kind of really provide a very quick overview, just so to remember some of the programs, just so that way we try to be on the same sheet of music as we move along. So please pardon me if you have heard this story over and over again, but essentially it kind of helps us get us to the same level playing field. So Brittany, did you get a chance to pop up that PowerPoint or that presentation?
Yeah, let me share my screen. You all can see it?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Next slide. So it really the overview, it involves collections, residential, commercial, brush and bulky collections, a little bit about the landfill, what are the waste reversion programs that we have within the city, the clean community initiatives, the education and outreach programs we have, and ultimately all the environmental compliance related to solid waste operations. So that really pretty much encompasses all of our operating units. There's here and there's a few others, but those are the main programs or areas that we essentially have embedded in the department. So next one, please, Brittany. So in collections, we all know we roughly serve every week about 147,000 customers, about 2,000 commercial customers, which really equate to about 3,000 containers that are deployed out there in the community. Brush and bulky, same number of customers, 147,000 customers. But if you look at residential only, when you combine trash pickup and recycling pickup, our folks are servicing about 45,000 accounts a day, or service bins a day. So that just gives you the magnitude in terms of the operation of that's out there on any given day. And just to give you pretty much an idea in terms of that in commercial too as well is about in tonnages in residential in tonnages you're talking about 157,000 tons. Commercial, you're talking about roughly about 62,000 tons. And when you look at brush and bulky, we're talking about 22,000 tons per year. So if you look at brush and bulky, how many tons do they collect essentially, or how many homes they service any given week? We're talking about 3,000 homes. So when you combine all those numbers, those are in the millions, like 10, 11, 12 million service essentially contacts that we have in any given day. So that is the vast majority of our operation in terms of collection operations. And so if we look at the tonnage, just not hypothetically, but if you sum up the tonnages that is picked up by residential collections, commercial collections, and brush and bulky, we're talking about roughly about over 240,000 tons. So if we want to really, what does that really amount to? So the way to best describe that is we look at a football field up in the air, 400 feet, 50 feet up in the air. So that's almost like a building of almost 38 stories high. So that just kind of gives you the magnitude of the amount of trash that is picked up on any given year. Okay. Next slide, Brittany. So then as we move forward to landfill operations, we're talking over 700,000 tons that essentially that are landfilled. So if you look at that, that's certainly also a significant amount of essentially of trash that again located and put it into perspective, you're talking about football field, but in this case being 40 feet, this is really 110 stories high. So it's almost like a building 1,300 feet up in the air. So when you talk about the number, the volume of trash that essentially that is being processed in landfill at Los Reales. The other program is the Household Hazardous Waste Program. We have roughly about 2,900 participants on the on the programs that we do under the rotating basis every month, and folks that really take their materials to landfill, roughly another 3,000 customers. So you look at that, we got about 6,000 service contacts essentially per year through the program participants in the program. The other activity that essentially manned at Los Reales is composting operations. So we divert green waste coming in. So you, as you can see on the slide, we roughly bring in about 1,600 tons of diverted green waste. And some of it has turned into chips, some of it has turned into mulch, and some of it has turned into composting. So composting, we're talking about 330 tons a year that essentially is being processed at that facility. I don't know if there's any questions so far. It might be going too fast, or if there are any particular.
So the year to date 2025 means as of essentially the 1st of July or the 1st of June.
It's just first of January, January 1st to date to July.
Okay, to July. Fascinating that the event participants and the landfill participants are essentially the same.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that, that's, I really amazes me there are that many people coming to the landfill with their HHW.
I think what happens to a lot of times, you may come in and dump some garbage, but you mm-hmm. also, instead of really throwing it with your typical garbage or at the working phase, you may end mm-hmm. up dropping your battery, your antifreeze, and your oil while you're there. And that's probably one of the reasons why that number may be a little bit higher than just making a one trip to Los Reales just to dispose of the HHW materials.
So it's combined with the other stuff.
Britain, next slide, please. So again, in terms of really the numbers, in terms of what are we talking about waste diversion, looking still right now, we're hovering anywhere between 20%, 19.6%, and 23% contamination from what we had seen in the past year. Or in the past few years, about hovering about 30%. We still collect in the purple bin roughly about, again, it's year to date about 750 tons. So when you look at it per month basis, we're just on the blue bins, we're diverting about 100 tons a month. When you look at the hard to recycle plastics, that is really not what goes into the actual orange bin, but was actually what represents in terms of have to renew bags. So the number, what we get into the roll-offs is about 20 tons per month. But then in reality, what is have to renew bags is almost half of that, 8 to 10 tons of what we see in that. In terms of really the food waste at home that is being collected, we essentially started when we started the program, we had roughly we had about three no 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 sorry had six drop-off locations. We're up in the upwards of 15 locations, getting a lot of participation, and that's essentially what we're collecting every month. So we're averaging about 8 tons of food waste collected every month, picking up more participants. So the numbers are growing. One of the things that we're noticing, though, a lot of the participants, or a good chunk of those participants, are from the county. And so we're seeing that at least a close to a quarter of those customers or those participants live outside the city limits. And so that's something that when we started the program, we said, let's just get it up and running. Let's see the participation. Let's not tell anybody that they can't be part of that, because it's difficult when we organize those events. We don't ask them for an ID. We just ask them to participate. We give them essentially that bin. But obviously, we ask them for their addresses. And when we started kind of looking and mapping that out, we're seeing, again, about 25% of those participants are from the county. So from a policy perspective, program perspective, what are we going to do? Are we interested in really diversion out in the region? Are we interested in really getting some help from Pima County really to manage this program? So those are the things that we need to start looking down the road. We got to get a better grip in terms of what our cost to provide that service, which is not significant, but we still need to recover some of that outside of of what's being recovered through the rates or through the programs right now. The zero waste events, we have had a good participation. The initial program a few years ago only had over 100 participants more. Now in the last event, we have had over 400 participants in those events. So so they're been very successful as well.
Those of us who've driven by them have seen the long lines of cars waiting to get in. Mm-hmm. We know how successful they are.
Next slide. And those are just some of the other stuff that we do in terms of really providing some community support as it relates to community cleanup efforts. So one of the programs that we don't advertise for obvious reasons is the illegal dumping program. So if a resident, a community activist, a neighborhood association says somebody dumped a mattress, a couch in my neighborhood, they call us, we generate a work order, and we go pick it up. And so we address those things as they come in. So roughly year to date, we're seeing close to 1,000 work order requests. The other thing that is embedded in the department, the homeless camp cleanup. So we're averaging per month, and again, this year is about 200 cleanups per month. So it's certainly busy, keeps our force busy. And if you look at how much trash we have essentially collected out of that, we're talking about 1,300 tons a year. Graffiti, what we have seen this year from January 1st till today is about 11,000 work order requests. Or graffiti totals about 3,500 work orders overall. Shopping carts, that's another thing, another program that is embedded in the department where we provide the service. So if there is an abandoned shopping cart in the right of way, we essentially have the ability to report it, to call it in, report it to ES Help, and then we then turn it around, create a work order to Arizona Cart Specialist, who go out there and pick up that card. Then they essentially process it, they document who the owner is, try to make contact with the owner, see if the owner can come and pick it up. It is delivered back to them. If it's not picked up or it's not recovered, then essentially we have the ability to dispose of it. But there is really a process that we need to follow, which is prescribed by state statute, that we cannot just pick up a shopping cart in the middle of the right of way, load it out to a truck and take a little rally. So there is a process associated with that. So that's also a program that is managed by the department. Over the past few years, this team up to cleanup effort was embedded in the city manager's office. It has been really transferred over to the department. So it's been very, very successful. We have had a lot of participants, over 3,000 volunteers. It is organized by one of our team members, Stephen Baturko, who reaches out to neighborhood associations and really organizes those cleanup efforts. Most of them are through volunteers within the neighborhood. Some of them are related to businesses. There are some neighborhood associations that are asking us really to do more than just picking up litter. So we're looking at how we best can accommodate those requests. But one of the things that we're being challenged is really the ability to staff those events, not only from an equipment perspective, personnel perspective, but be able to accommodate those requests. We still have the neighborhood rollout program. And so in fiscal year 25 or year to date, we have about 144 rollouts that are being scheduled to be delivered. One of the things that we're asking neighborhood associations is, could you consider really, instead of deploying a roll-off, can you consider just maybe picking up two or three spots within your neighborhood, do your cleanup, bring those materials to those particular spots, and treat those spots as a typical brush and bulky set out. And then that will only send one truck to police it up, pick it up. And then also the neighbors are not having to haul their couch or mattresses from one end of the neighborhood to another. And the benefit for them is really transporting that material from one end to the other. But also for us as a department is, when we deploy a roll-off, is that becomes to be an attractive nuisance. So sometimes it's very difficult to open some of the doors. By the time somebody gets to use them, there's already trash outside the the roll-off. Sometimes it's very difficult to load up the roll-off. And so when we go in services, those roll-offs, we have to send a crew, typically a B&B crew, to police around the roll-off so that way then we can call in the roll-off truck to come and service a roll-off. And a lot of times we do end up doing double or triple work. So one of the things we're asking some neighborhoods, if they can and they're open to try it out, is really just identifying two or three spots within the neighborhood so that we can go out there and service a typical brush and bulky crew. We're still have five recycling centers. One of them is being relocated at the end of the month. As you know, the Ward 6 Neighborhood Recycling Center is moving out to Reed Park or behind Reed Park. And the only one of the major changes that is going to occur is we're going to be deploying just the bins that are not bins that essentially what we pick up glass, food waste, and non-recyclable plastic. So anything that doesn't go into the blue bin will deploy roll-offs that accept that commodity. So you won't be seeing those blue ones, and that's really just the way that that essentially most of all the material that goes into the blue bins, most of residents, or virtually every single resident, have the ability really to use essentially their bins at home, and as a multifamily home or as a business, you have the ability really to solicit those services and not really relying on the free service that they're not really are participating in, or which is being subsidized by the residential customers. So we're going to give it a try. This is certainly a change, and with the support of Ward 6, that's what we're essentially trying to do. It's not really totally replicate efforts, but just really offer the drop-off facilities that cannot be accommodated using our blue bin program. Next one.
Oh, Carlos, going back to moving Ward 6 to Randolph real quick.
Mm-hmm.
There's just horrible problems with illegal dumping. Have we come up with anything to help with that? Or you're sending people out, what, practically every day to clean up the mess, right?
Ms. Jarder, right? We're going to give it a try. We're going to keep an eye on it, try to really send the crews really to go out there and police it up. And if it really becomes to be something that cannot be managed, then either A, we'll look at another location, or unfortunately, maybe we may be forced to not continue to operate that facility in that area. So the initial thought is let's just get it relocated. Let's find something that is close by to the existing facility. And let's give it hell and see how it may work. And without really spending a whole lot of effort on fencing it, cameras and things like that, knowing that some of those things are going to be costly, they're going to be difficult to manage. And at the end of the day, very limited opportunities for us to enforce anything out there as it relates to illegal dumping. Unfortunately, the only strategy to fight illegal dumping is just continue to keep an eye on it and keep it as clean as we can.
Isn't it the case that most of the trash and so forth has come from the cardboard, and so by removing the blue bins, which is primarily being used for cardboard, hopefully you're taking away that source of illegal dumping.
Yes, Ms. Marwood, excellent point. Yeah, you're spot on. Yes.
Okay. Oh, and real quick, going back to the homeless cleanup. Sorry. Are there still three crews working on that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes. And they're still doing the under the bridge cleanup still in the washes.
Up to a certain level. Not so. If we have an extended culvert that goes totally underneath the road and it goes dark, we go in there probably no more than 10, 15 feet. we don't go into in the entire culvert. So yes, we do try to service those as much as we can. Yes.
Okay, because I know you got some special equipment and everything to do that kind of work, and you're doing okay, keeping the crews. I know that's tough work.
It's been tough, and I think, and that's really one of the challenges. Is really we really are down personnel. We really are having a
Is
hard
that
time, really keeping folks on board, and so yeah, that's really is a struggle, and is going to continue to be a struggle for us.
okay.
Next slide. And I believe lastly is this really environmental compliance. The landfill itself has five active permits that we have to stay up with: groundwater, methane, and so there's surface emissions that we have to stay on top of that. So it requires a lot of testing, a lot of monitoring, and we still have under that umbrella, we have five regulated landfills that we have to send reports, that do a lot of monitoring, as compared to the closed landfills, which are 16 of them, citywide, excuse me, citywide. So that just gives you an idea in terms of how many monitoring wells we have, in terms of methane gas at active landfills, closed landfills, groundwater wells that we have to monitor. So that's certainly keeps our folks really busy in terms of trying to make sure that we take the samples, prepare the reports, and really stay on top of that, not only in terms of the work being done internally, but also work being done by external consultants that helps us maintain those permits into compliance. Next one. The other program, Christina, Brittany, and her group are really working on that, is really just doing the education and public outreach. There's been a lot of presentations, not only to the K-8, presentations. There's several types. There's not just only for kids, but also for other audiences, mass recyclers, Recycling 101. It really just talks about all the amount of really outreach that's been compiled and is ongoing, really just to keep folks informed the best we can. What's really interesting is when you look at Recycling Coach, the application, if you look at the number of customers, we have roughly about 151,000 customers, that almost half of them subscribe really to the Recycle Coach app. So if we're servicing 151 residential customers, we got 64,000 customer subscribers. That's really a good number of participation in terms of folks really receiving information, notification, and scheduling. So Christina and her group that have done a great job, because 5, 6 years ago we had like 10, 15,000 subscribers, and now we're up in the upwards of 64,000 customers. The other number that is really interesting too is there are over 7,000 subscribers to our environmental services newsletter. So it's a good number to have. Again, when it represents really the number of folks participating in the overall customer base, that's really a good number really to have. So again, one of the things we just continue to put an emphasis on education, and it's not just kids, but it's basically all over the place, just to make sure that we try to capture as many people as possible. Next one, Brittany. And Ms. Margo, this is, oh, Ms. Yartner, here's really to answer your question. So right now, the department has about 243 assigned positions. We have filled positions right now, 198. So we're running the department right now with 45 vacant positions. And so we're about 80% strained right now. And so, but my worry on that is, our worry is really that most of those vacant positions, I would say more than half of them, or close to half of them, are really frontline positions. And those are equipment operations specialists at the landfill. You're talking about three of them: environmental service workers, which help us litter control, being spotters at the landfill, being part of the B&B crew. We're missing 7 folks there, and we're missing about 18 equipment operators. And those are just really real vacant positions. Doesn't really account for folks that are either on light duty or on FML. So if we add those, that number jumps to about 25, 26 individuals. So what we're trying to do really to compensate for that, three main things is obviously put a lot of emphasis creating or scheduling or organizing a hiring event just only focused for environmental service operators or workers, not diluted with another other positions within the city, just really focusing on our operation. Really want to make sure that we're clear in terms of really what's the city's requirements as it relates to background checks. We need to narrow that down, and we need to make sure that we understand what are the parameters of that. Because I think we go out there, we recruit, we bring folks on board, we start going through the background checks, and there's some backgrounds that we cannot accept, but there's some backgrounds that we can live with, and it's just really identifying what those parameters are, because if an applicant knows already ahead of time what the parameters are, then he and she can decide whether to apply or not. Eventually we'll see how that ends up or not, but not really don't want to be in a position that we waste our time, get our hopes high in terms of bringing somebody on board, and based on really the background, we cannot hire them or bring them on board. And then the other thing is we believe that maybe the market is getting to be hotter now, and we need to make some adjustments in terms of our compensation. So we're really asking really for a review of that, and not just comparing. And the ask is, let's not compare the salaries really just to other cities, because even some of the cities around us are not the ones picking up, providing the service. Most of the service is Sahuarita, Oro Valley, Marana, all of those are being provided by a private waste collector, like Waste Management, Republic, or Waste Connection. So what are the salaries look like for them as compared to ours? And so those are the things that we're really are asking our folks really to help us, our HR folks to help us, just so that we can move things along. We are really, if we continue to be challenged in that area, we're looking at possibly just working with a temporary agency that is just focused, that has deployed staff in the Phoenix area, and their sole, I would say, emphasis is solid waste operations. So we're looking to see from a procurement perspective if we can access that and see if we can set some sort of an operation here in Tucson. In the meantime, that's not the ideal way to look at it. But our concern is we if we continue to be in this path, we don't want really for our services really to be affected, nor we want to overwork our folks that they are already tired. And so we certainly want to do everything we can really to alleviate that situation.
Carlos, are you still doing that program through PEMA? For drivers to get their commercial licenses?
We have, but it has been very challenging. And the challenge with that is really has been in terms of scheduling, and it's been about the reimbursement, the payment and the reimbursement for those classes. It's been a challenge for us. It's been very, very bureaucratic to deal with that. So we have found a more of a, not necessarily easy way, but more facilitated way really to work with the driving schools than really going through PEMA. It's okay. More expedited, and the cost is almost relatively the same.
Okay. Less paperwork, probably.
So it's right. The PEMA college side that's the difficulty, not the city side?
It could be both, okay, because I think And what I mean by that is sometimes it could be interpreted as it's a tuition reimbursement. Is it travel and training? How do we code that? And those programs sometimes don't align with the city programs, and as compared to how we're going to treat them. And so that's what it essentially gets convoluted in terms of how we may want to, how we may present it, how we may code it, which raises some flags in some programs in central HR. Well, that's not tuition reimbursement. That's not travel and training. So there's a lot of the challenge paperwork wise to be able to get the employee funds reimbursed. And to be honest with you, we probably had something to do with that. We were just worried about trying to get somebody through the door. We probably didn't follow all the steps, but the employee made the commitment, got the class, got the CDL. Now we're really struggling really to get that employee their money reimbursed. Mm-hmm. And just the whole process has not been that easy to deal with.
Okay.
Brittany, that was the end of it, right?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
Well, Brittany, can you send us that PowerPoint?
Sure.
Email to us?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. So I don't know if there's any other questions. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That was a lot. Where are we? Okay. All right. So you're going to give us an update on the hard to recycle plastics and how that's working out.
So we have been recently advised that some of the program managers that were running the Have to Renew program from Reynolds company are no longer with the company. And so what we are understanding is Reynolds is a corporation. They really are reviewing all the business units, and obviously the review, they have the Renew program. And that was really a program that they identified as not being in their minds or in their views, not sustainable, not growing. And so they have made some adjustments internally really with the program. From when we started kind of dealing with them, originally we had a staff member of four. Now we're essentially down to one staff member. Their feedback to us is they're going to continue really to support the programs, continue to try to work with the current markets that they're working with right now. They're not in a position really to grow their programs or their businesses. Moving along, they had some plans really to deploy their programs in California. Since then, they're saying we're just going to stay status quo. We're going to monitor that and see where we at in a few months. So just want to give you a heads up. So that's indication that what could be happening. So a couple of things that maybe the assumptions they made or the programming changes that, or the programmatic assumptions they made are probably have changed or are changing, that essentially maybe their business model is not as feasible or as solvent or as strong as they had anticipated. And maybe their ability really to continue to or willingness really to continue to carry this program forward, that's something that they are probably considering. So so that's one side of the equation. The other side of the equation the reason why we ended up going with Have to Renew was our concern that we were not moving material to the market as fast as it was coming in. So we recently made a shipment out of Freedman. I would say all of that was Have to Renew bags. And essentially I was under the impression that it was going to be placed in one of the Have to Renew markets back east or somewhere in the Midwest. I came to find out that essentially that shipment was essentially sent to Bifusion. So the problem with that is if one of the reasons we were going with Have to Renew was Bifusion's capacity really to handle all of our plastics. So then obviously picked up the phone and said, what's going on? What's happening? So their response was, here's the challenge that we're facing. So the challenge we're facing is, one, It's limited market demand for the product. So it's, but I thought you had demand out there, and that's the reason we went. Yes, that's correct. But one of the things that also you, Tucson, asked us is that you didn't want really for the Hepta Renew to be used as the energy bag or be used in incineration. Yeah, that's correct. So we're with that, those restrictions, we're having very limited, I would say, use or markets for the product. And also, it's almost like a waiting game for them as well. If we know that at the end of, within a year or so, even though the plastic continues to build and continues to be generated, that the ultimate venue for that product is going to be by fusion, maybe we ought to wait for that. I said, my response to that was, don't want to stockpile any more material that is going to cost me money really to store, that is really created more of an excessive hazard. So you really got to start moving material sooner rather than later. And so that's what they're working again with Bifusion to be able to do that, get the material out there. The other thing that they're saying is it's really, again, very limited market in the West Coast, very, very expensive for me to really get the material out to the East Coast. But even if I do that, I just can't find mechanical recyclers that can use your product. So our response is, or it has been, is, well, that's not what we heard when you came in and presented to us that information a few months ago. If that has changed, then that's certainly something that we need to figure out. So my suggestion or my recommendation would be is, let's continue to keep the program in as is condition. Let's not really just continue to, in terms of advertisement, advocating for the program. Let's just, I would say, let's stay status quo. Let's not spend more time and effort on doing that. Let's monitor the sales of the bags. Continue with essentially the program that we have it out there right now. Continue to monitor that. And if required, then develop an alternate strategy on what we're going to do with the program moving forward, or really develop an exit strategy out of the Hepta Renew program sooner rather than later. And that's really where we at right now. Just don't want to create a lot of uncertainty, but at the same time, don't want to say that everything is perfect. So we're running into that. Let's just like we've been doing that for the past 3 to 4 years, and trying to do everything we can to continue to have this program up and running. We may be running out of options, and the last option was Hepta Renew. We've been running out of options, so we may just have to develop some sort of a exit strategy moving forward. The same thing goes with essentially once Bifusion is up and running, we also got to give essentially time for them to get set up and succeed. And also we need to evaluate essentially the program. So my suggestion is, again, is it's we're on this path more than halfway into it. Jeez. Let's just continue to react to the situations, keep more of a closer look on the Hepta Renew program, possibly develop a continuation strategy, or if not, if that's not going to work, develop an exit strategy for that, and then be in a position really to store the material that is being generated today, maybe store it at Freedman, maybe store it at Los Reales, provide that feedstock for Bifusion when they're up and running. And once they're there, then we'll cross that bridge when we get there and take a look at that at that point in time. So just want to be transparent up front. And I think it's really the expectations in terms of how we went into the program, what we directed them, that what they needed to do with the product, no incineration, no pyrolysis, don't want to really build a big stockpile on that. And at the end of the day, I think it's what we are seeing is, even though we have created a diversion program and we're setting aside the material, we still, that when we do that, there is an investment, and we make that investment, and the city made that investment to do that. But then what we're seeing is what is really the end market for that product, and if there isn't, then those are the things that we have to be mindful of, that that we have an outlet or multiple outlets really for that product. And I think what's also not really working in our favor is really the fact that still the global market, the supply of virgin material is extremely cheap as compared to this recycled product. So that's something that is really not working in our favor, that it's going to continue to affect us moving down the road. And not any different. So you talk about, and I mentioned it earlier, it's composting material. We bring in green waste, we're processing, we're creating some composting material. We're trying to get users really to take the material, but there's times that we have a stockpile, a big stockpile of material, and yet we don't have an end user. So even though we're diverting it, we still really the end user, the end market, it's not quite there. And obviously we take responsibility for that because we haven't really explored those markets, but in terms of the end use, but that's something that we need to work on moving down the road. But also one of the things we've got to consider is our line of business is really picking up garbage, recyclable, getting them to a recycling facility, landfill stuff, and not really in the business of brokering the sale of plastics or brokering the sale of compost material, because that's, we're not equipped really to be able to do that. From a city perspective, it's our hands are tied in terms of really working in a commodity market and being a commodity broker.
Which brings me to Bifusion. Do we really know that there's a good market for those blocks that they'll be building? Or are we going to end up in the same problem there?
So I did have a discussion with Heidi. Her response is she's really focusing to make sure that she's got all the equipment, the ability really to manufacture the blocks. She is working with the outlets of where she may be selling those products. I didn't quite get a good grip or in terms of what are the potential end markets. Didn't want to go into those details, but that's certainly something that I asked, and she's obviously working on that. But it may be a situation where we may end up being in the same situation down the road. Again, that's just me personally thinking that without really any knowledge of or really what that market is like out there.
Yeah, because it seems to me one of the issues is if it begins to be used in construction widely, it has to be certified as a material that can, you know, under all the building code stuff. And so that's worried me, is how much have we pushed them, or how much is our building code people in considering or paying for any kind of research on how those blocks can be used? How tall can they be put up? Can they sustain a roof and all that kind of technical stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like they're not talking about that right now.
Not from our end, and maybe she is having discussions with other folks, but not that's, we've got enough to worry about it on our end. I really just haven't ventured into that from our end. But I'm assuming she's really made, I know she's doing some testing. I know she has gotten a lot of feedback from a lot of residents in terms of really, are those blocks, do they have PFAS? Are they contaminated? So she's going to be doing some testing on those blocks really to address that situation or that concern. But in terms of building code amendments and getting it approved, coming up with some sort of prescriptive approval for her products, I'm not aware of that. She is, but I just didn't get into that.
Any other questions?
So maybe as we progress, as we move along, maybe we'll come back to you and say, hey, here's what a summary of the findings, what we're seeing, and maybe a recommended approach. Maybe you guys can take a look at it and maybe weigh in and provide us some recommendation for us to move forward on that end. But it's certainly, it's been, we just need to look at all the options. Continue to look at all the options.
You have to find the entrepreneurs. Okay, well, that's disappointing, and I'm sure we'll move on. Let's see, where are we? Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to item 4 for our financial monthly report. And I see Maggie.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Let me go ahead and share my screen. Okay. Now let's just. Ooh. Okay. Can you see my screen? Everyone see okay?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we'll just start with the overview for Fund 502. So starting at the top with our actual revenues that have been collected for the fund, we're at $75.8 million as of July 1st. There are a few items that could still continue to trickle in that we may see that have posted on the 1st or the 2nd of the month when I have this report for the next month. The other item that we will see is I will be doing the transfer, speaking of bifusion, of the $1 million from the general fund that was committed by Marin Council in the funding that was called framework funding. We've exceeded $1 million in expenditures for this fiscal year for the bifusion building. So I'm going to do that transfer. So we will see that post the next time we look at the actual revenues. So this number will be north of about $76 million the next time. So where we were at with revenues as of July 1st was $60.4 million. If we look at last year we ended at 64.6. I think we'll probably be pretty comparable to that. I had forecasted quite a bit higher based on where we were thinking we were going to land with our construction in progress for our big capital projects. And bifusion is one of them. The work out at Los Reales is another. And also, I had thought in our forecast that we would receive approximately $13 million in heavy equipment this year. And we still have those things on order, but the timing of receiving them is not always 100% known. At this point, we've received $8.8 million of heavy equipment this year, and that's what's posted. But I will tell you that my business services team, we are still posting transactions from the fiscal year last year. FY25 is now last year, and we're still posting those transactions through the end of July. So we have a big queue of invoices. Our ESD colleagues are sending us invoices for June activity. And we have about 2.5 weeks now to get all of those into our Workday system and paid. So these numbers will likely change when we look at them again together the next month. So we're at $60.4 million now. The other things that haven't posted is the ES fund has some debt, certificates of participation debt, and we have not made the principal payment yet or it hasn't posted for the year yet. So once that posts, that payment is over $1 million. So we will see that post as well. You can see it's a zero right here. So there's some big items that we're still waiting on that we'll see continue to post. And then we'll be able to, when we look next month, to also start looking at fiscal year 26 actuals. We do have some now. We're in the 10th day of the month, but I didn't include them at this point because they're They're pretty minimal, and and it'll be much more interesting to look at once we have a month under our belt. So one thing to show you, for our budget for next year, our total request that was approved by Mayor and Council, we have $73.6 million in approved expenditures for fiscal year 26, and that's this year, current year, starting July 1st, and 75.6 million in revenues. One thing I wanted to show you was last year, our actual revenues were $70.9 million, and this year so far, and this doesn't include that transfer, we're at 75.8. So we are seeing the benefits of a full year of collecting the $6.25 increase to residential customers. That was phased in over two fiscal years. So the first couple years, we just had 6 months worth of activity, and this year it's been a full year of that rate increase. So there, wherever we land, if we're in the $64 million range, we're still going to end the year in the green. So meaning that we'll have collected more revenues than we spent for fiscal year 25, which just goes into Fund 502's fund balance and waits for later capital needs that should come up or may come up in the future. Any questions about, and the other nice thing about increasing the fund balance to Fund 502 is that that increases the interest that the cash balance earns. So the interest earnings will go up as well, which is another added benefit. Any questions on the Fund 502 overview? Nope. Okay, so we'll just move to the programs. Here's the $60.4 million that is posted in 502, with administration is always the highest at 60.5 now, 16.5 million. What posts to administration is all the capital projects. The central service cost allocation that comes from the city central service departments, business services, human resources, procurement, IT. They charge this enterprise fund for those services. We get a charge from Tucson Water for the billing system and the billings. So that's what posts there. Our next highest is residential collections. So this includes salaries, everything, salaries, contracted services, supplies, et cetera. Then our third highest expenditures is the 10.1 million. And that's where we're landing at 60.4 million. For the year. And again, I think it's probably going to be pretty close to when it's all said and done, when we finish up the fiscal year, I think it'll probably be around this 64 million that we ended up with in fiscal year 24. And last but not least, we have the graffiti program. This number is going to go up. This was missing the last few months of we have one supplier who provides the services, and we have a staff person also who helps manage that program, and that's what gets paid. This is paid out of the general fund, this allocation to ES. And so this number is going to be closer to $900,000 once we finish the year out. Those invoices from the supplier that does the graffiti abatement are averaging around $85,000 a month right now. So this is going to be closer to $900,000 is where we'll end up. So that is the summary by program. Any questions on the programmatic details? Nope. Okay.
Nice to be in the green.
Agreed. Yes. Thank you, everyone. Have a good afternoon.
Oh, thank you. All right. Oh, okay. Five. Trevor, shoot. Trevor's supposed to give the report. Margo, do you think we can come up with some of that from
I don't
the
have any notes or anything with me.
Oh, I might have a few. Let me see. Let me look that quick. Sorry. We got a lot going on. Let me just get all my, I gotta, I'm just looking real quick for the papers. Otherwise,
Well,
we can.
we didn't meet this month. We didn't meet
Right. It
in
was
July.
the month before. And shoot. I'm not finding
Can
stuff.
pull up the
Sorry.
agenda, or I
Let's
can pull up the agenda, or we can do it next month.
let's do it next month. You know, I know there was a lot from Frank and then Trevor gave us the update on the U of A campus recycling. So that'd be good for him to give us a final number on that. So, but anyhow, sorry about that. Counting on Trevor. So I guess we're getting close to the end for item six. Do you have some future agenda items?
Did you want to go over at all the MRF report? Because that was given to the people on the paper in the materials. I don't know that there's anything.
Do you remember anything from I
Well, I
like
was just looking at it right now. In May, we had less collected than
okay.
in April. The charge for the price per ton that we are getting for number twos and number fives has gone up to $800, and the number one PET bottles is 420, and we were running at 440 for all of those. And the aluminum is up to over $2,000 a ton. So the end result was that we only had to pay in May, we paid more in May, $34,000, and in April, $25,000 for our contribution to the MRF. The net tip fee was a little less in May, probably because there was $1,000, a hundred tons less coming in the recycling, so we're having somewhat of a decline in amount recycled. And the
Oh, and then
price.
also the thing about the audit. We have
Yes.
the information from the new audit.
Right. And the new audit brought it down to, as Carlos pointed out, 19.8%. So that's certainly a lot better than the 23% that we've been looking at.
Yeah.
We thought that in part that could have been from some of the new belts that they upgraded some of the system. So we're hoping that that's the reason. So that number of the contamination at 19.6 will continue lower.
And that's great.
Yep.
Any questions from anybody? If you had a chance to go over the MRF report.
I've got a question, if Christina, if you're still on there. Looks like the price for transportation on the glass went up. Did that just go up in May? It went up to $50.66 a ton. No, Christina. Carlos, would you know, is that transportation from the landfill or from the MRF?
So, Doug, it's really, we did away with the transportation cost a while ago. So this is really just reflected of really it does take into account the value of the commodity, and it adds essentially transportation costs. So yeah, to your point, the way it looks like it, that there was an increase of $15 as compared to April of the processing of glass. So let me double check on that and see if that's accurate and why that is. But yeah, to your point, it does show that the cost per ton for glass is $50 when in April was $35. And it's not really just related to the transportation cost. It's really the true cost or negative value of getting the glass up to Phoenix.
Oh, it's so the transportation cost is minus what you're getting in rebate for the glass. Is that what you're saying?
There's a footnote yes. there if you want to read it, a number two. It says that the cost of transportation of the glass, $50.66 ton per ton in May, is deducted from the MRF revenue for sales. On May 2025, the cost of sending glass to the MRF was $160.24 a ton.
Yeah, but I was asking because it went up from some $34 up to $50.
Right.
And I was just curious, is that a trucking cost? And, you know, fuel hasn't really gone up that much.
Well, it claims here on that footnote number two on the bottom of the MRF report that it is a transportation surcharge. But that's all I can tell you. It may be that the company that's picking it up is charging more, because it could also be time and, you know, the time for the driver and so forth.
Yeah, it could be several things. I was just curious on that.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Doug, it doesn't make sense really, the footnote either. So let us look into it and let us take a look at it and try to get you a response, because it doesn't make sense to me either.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Let's go back to our future agendas. We start a list. First, I think we'll be looking forward to an update, Carlos, if you hear anything with the Hefty program.
Yeah, we'll kind of keep it a standing item until we figure out what we're going to do there, until we figure some stabilization on that.
I was going to add the other one was more about what's happening with the methane gas.
Yes.
So there was a newspaper article about the ES being fined or the city being fined a certain amount of money. But then we had heard in committee that, in fact, that money was going to be allowed to be spent to remediate the problems. And there were new wells and so forth being drilled. I don't know why I can't talk. Anyway, I hope that we can hear some more about what the real story is. It was kind of a shock to see in the newspaper that we were being fined $200,000.
Ms. Margaret, I think it's a good point. I think we can certainly provide ESAC as a full the update on that project and that about the landfill gas. Yes, it's I can make it a comprehensive update on that. Yes.
Okay. Was that fine in 2024?
No, it was. Well,
or was it just recent? Because I thought that Frank told us that there was a fine in 2024, but
what it is? There was an inspection that was done, a joint inspection between PDEQ, Pima County Environment and Water Quality, and EPA back in April. We didn't hear, and so they found some deficiencies. We got into compliance within pretty much a month to 2 months, and we didn't hear about the potential notice of violation until October. So then we responded to that, and that's what we can provide you an update of where we're at overall. So the way it stands today is we came up with a remediation plan or an alternative plan that would essentially not require us really to pay that fine, but make some improvements at the landfill to get us further into compliance.
Okay. We're all dying to know who the contractor is that's remaining anonymous. So maybe we'll find that out. Okay.
Yes.
Anyone else for a future agenda? All right. Item seven. There is no call to the audience, I believe. And then let's move to adjournment. And we're getting out a little early today. So, anyhow, stay cool. And then we'll see you next month. And yeah, so we're leaving it at 5:14. So
Very
take
good.
care, everybody.
Thank you. Take care.
Lots of
Thank you.
love. Thank
Bye.
you.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
Bye, Drew.
Bye now.
Bye.